Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Bill Cameron will be here, according to our sources. There's a car situation, but it will only delay Bill shortly, and he will be in the studio before long here on the Friday edition of The Drive. A short week for us. We didn't do shows on Monday or Tuesday. Actually, as a matter of fact, we were just talking right before the show started. I was talking with Jacob Goins from On the Line. Jacob and I will be heading to Nashville in a little bit more than a week from now. I think probably Sunday we're going to drive up in the Wings Wagon and stay all week long. Can't promote it enough. 4 days, we're going to have 7 hours of live on-site coverage. ESPN 106.7 original programming. The Max Roundtable is going to be there. On the Line is going to be there with Jacob. And I'm going to be there representing The Drive. That is SEC Media Days on Broadway at the Grand Hyatt, I believe, or the Grand, I think I just said what it was, but it's the It's the fancy one. They got downtown, so it's looking forward to the SEC taking Broadway with Media Days, including Hugh Freeze, who will be returning to Media Days, first one since he was actually there in 2017, and I believe he was let go by Ole Miss between Media Days and the start of the season in the summer of 2017. So it'll be Hugh Freeze's first SEC Media Days since 2017 and his first one as the new head coach of the Auburn Tigers. I think that's one of the more interesting one of the more interesting moments we'll see, not just for folks who cover Auburn, and you can buzz Drew in if you want, Bill, you can buzz Bill in if you want, Drew. Tried to not break my stride there, but Bill Cameron is on the premises now. And Hugh Freeze will be, it'll be Tuesday, SEC Media Days in Nashville when Hugh Freeze takes the microphone. That's also the day that the back-to-back national champion Georgia Bulldogs will be taking the stage at Media Days. And I think one of the storylines is we don't see unprecedented that often in modern college football. We don't see stuff that's never, ever happened before. Hard to do that with as many seasons as we've had. There hasn't been a three-time national champion, back-to-back-to-back national champion, since, I believe, Minnesota claims three titles in the 30s.
Yeah, there hasn't been one since they've been determined on the field in championships.
In the real era of college football, right, there has not been a program, There has not been a coach that's won three straight national championships. Georgia has won the last two. They enter this season as the favorite, according to most people, to win this one. And so that would be
something. If they can keep their players, out of traffic court.
If they can keep their players.
Goodness.
Remarkable. I mean, that Atlanta Journal-Constitution story about the number of players that have been different situations.
Did that include the one yesterday?
I don't believe so.
There was a prominent 88 and a 55.
Prominent story about that. And Georgia's also got quarterback issues to figure out. Stetson Bennett was the quarterback for most of the last two seasons as the national championships, and now he moves on and they have to figure out how to replace him. They're excited about their options, but we've heard that before. We've heard, hey, we love the options behind this guy, and then you see them out there on the field, and it doesn't quite work out. Georgia's a really talented team, so you figure they've got enough.
They've got a ton of talent.
Maybe the biggest story of this season is when you have a team that's favored.
Yeah, you're right.
That
is. But at Media Days, Kirby's going to be asked about controlling his players.
Absolutely. Kirby's going to have to answer.
Can you put a governor on your players? Can you slow them down? I mean, now we've heard coaches say many, many times in the past, hey, one thing you can't coach is speed. But you need it needs to be controlled when they're driving.
Yeah, we'll see who's willing to make things a little bit uncomfortable by asking Kirby Smart about stuff like that.
I'm sure someone will.
I'm sure someone
will.
And let me ask you this: what kind of if you as someone who you've been to most of the media days there's ever been, so I think you're an expert on this. What would you tell Hugh Freeze to prepare for question wise? What do you think there? What do you think people could ask about that? That Hugh Freeze needs to be ready
for. He's going to be asked about the past and, you know, does he feel like, you know, the time is right or he deserves this challenge? I mean, he's going to be asked things like that. I don't think there's any way around that.
And he was asked some of that when he got the job as well, but I think some of that could be rehashed. I mean, I think both the... I would say more prominent than anything that happened at Liberty, although he could be asked about things at Liberty too. But I think the most
he's going to be asked more about Ole Miss.
I was going to say
getting back into the SEC.
The most glaring thing that he'll be asked about off the field wise would be the circumstances, not just the things that led to NCAA penalties, but the circumstances that led to Hugh Freeze's termination at Ole Miss and whether or not he's sufficiently made amends, whether or not. The behavior should have disqualified him from a job like Auburn. What work he's doing, you know, still to maintain. You know, I think that all of that could be broached at media days for Hugh Freeze. And if you're the folks, and there are people, right, Bill? There are people at Auburn who are working with Hugh Freeze and getting him ready for media days because they understand. I mean, this is a big stage for him. Since taking the Auburn job, this is one of the when he takes the microphone in the big room as Auburn head coach, it'll be the biggest stage Hugh Freeze has been on as Auburn head coach from a media standpoint.
Oh, no question. No question about it.
And I think that there are people at Auburn who recognize the importance of that.
There were national folks at Auburn when Hugh got the job, but there will be more folks
and
there
in
Nashville.
In a year where there was so little turnover in the SEC, right? It's not like there's a bunch of coaches that are facing their first media days or anything like that. You have the situation at Mississippi State, right? I mean, you have a new head coach there, and the circumstances are more tragic. But Hugh Freeze is... I mean, that's one of the big stories, too. Hugh Freeze is back in the conference, and this is the first time he's going to answer questions and potentially... from people outside of the... local beat and the national folks that went to the introductory press conference, but those questions could include difficult instances from his past.
Oh yeah, no question about it. So I did make it.
You did make it, Bill Cameron. Everybody,
a couple of minutes late. Yeah, I mean the option was, Matt, one of Matt's vehicles needed to be checked on. Battery was sketchy and it needed an oil change. No better place to do it than Franklin. But the options were he could drop me off and then use my car to run a few errands and then get my car back here at some point later. But with a one-year-old, it's a little difficult to do that.
How's the one-year-old doing?
Kennedy's doing great.
She's the best.
She's doing
Hello,
great.
Kennedy. Littlest drive listener.
There you go. But the other option was, since he doesn't live too far from here, for me to run him by the house so he'd have the other car and he could do that. So that's what we did.
Drivers? Is that what we call them? The fans? Is that what we call the fan base? The drivers?
Yeah. Because we will drive you crazy. That's right. yeah. So anyway, good to be here on this Friday. You know what? I am saying, because I saw the way it was in my neighborhood, it rained pretty good at your place, didn't it? My wife said it poured at my house. Not a drop.
No,
not a drop at my house.
That loop, right around Town Creek Park, right? Like that loop.
I hit it. I mean, as I came into it, it's like she had just been telling me it's been pouring over here. And I said it hadn't rained. I made the curve. It's funny. Our street has a curve. And when you round the curve, it was dry. You round the curve and it was like I hit a wall of rain.
Yeah,
I mean,
and that wall of rain was on top of me. I mean, I could hear and the suddenness of it.
A little bit of
rain. Three minutes later, I'm outside in a typhoon. I mean, it is just.
I'd gotten through working in the yard, And
You just beat the buzzer then. Well, I guess it didn't rain.
Well, it hadn't rained. Yeah, I mean, maybe it is now, but that's good. It felt like it was going to rain a couple of times. I almost hoped it rained a couple of times because, right, for the time being, I'm huskyless. Husky's having trouble.
Oh, you're analog. You don't have the digital mower.
Husky isn't able right now to find his
with a compass. He wouldn't be able to find.
Well, the thing is, he can't find the
barriers, the property.
Yeah, that's
lines.
It. Yeah. The lines.
If you let Husky go, so, he'd keep going.
Well, no. What he does is he doesn't go. He says,
he's on strike.
I can't find the boundaries. So it's like, oh, well, that's good. So Husky is being tended to.
He's got to know in bounds and out of bounds.
Now, well, you're right about that. There need to be boundaries.
Yeah, otherwise.
Always told the kids.
Check your phone.
Have to be boundaries.
Check your phone and Husky's on I-85. Yeah. And it's like, uh-oh.
That's not good. I have my old, and I mean old, it's probably it's close to 20 years old. Craftsman self-propelled mower that I have like rebuilt. The self-propel went out on it. They don't make that self-propel anymore, but I realized, that the handle for the self-propel on mine had been on one side and they make them for the other side. I converted it. It's been working great. It cuts very well. It's a heavy mower, but I mean, with the self-propel, it's great. Well, guess what? In the backyard, self-propel went out. Something happened. I am sure that with YouTube I can figure this out, but it was quite the task, quite the chore, finishing up. If it had been the front yard, I wouldn't be here. I may be like prone in the front yard. My front yard's grass is so thick. It is so sounds like a joke. You sounds like a punch. How thick is it?
Thick is it? It's, I love it.
Thick as a brick.
Henny Youngman is going to be on the show later.
Really. But no, just made it and got here. But yeah, it's like, yeah, having to push a heavy lawnmower to cut the grass is not fun. All right. We are here, though, on the Friday edition of The Drive. Anything you want to talk about, it's Major League All-Star Weekend, the Major League Draft coming up on Sunday.
How about... Do I have this right? 5 of the 9 American League starters. Do you know where I'm going with this?
No, I do not.
I believe
first time.
5 of the 9 starters for the American League on Tuesday will be Texas Rangers.
Yeah, I notice that. They don't populate the All-Star squad as much as the Braves do.
They don't. The Braves have
eight.
Eight on the roster, because they just I believe Austin, somebody was just replaced. Maybe Aaron Judge was just replaced on the All-Star team.
Yeah, I knew he wasn't going to make it.
Okay, so I believe they moved one of the Rangers outfielders, Adolis Garcia,
into the
starting lineup, and that will give Texas.
He's a former Brave.
Five of the 9 starters in the All-Star game will be Texas. Team wasn't very good last year.
No, they weren't.
Made some shrewd moves in free agency. Like we were saying, picking 4th? Is that right? Picking 4th in the draft?
Yep.
I mean, if somebody, and there's a toolsy outfielder, right? Max Clark is there. Mm-hmm. If somebody goes with him in the top 3, the Rangers could find themselves with a player that people think could be one of the top 10, 12 prospects in baseball, and maybe a guy who could contribute in a pennant race right now. I think if one of those 3 slips to Texas, maybe we see them up sooner rather than later.
All right, we'll get to our first break. Ed, hang on. Want to give you plenty of time. Let's remind you.
We don't want to cut you short, Ed. That's why we're going
to commercial. Want to remind everybody, hour number 1 of The Drive, brought to you by the good folks at Kia of Auburn on South College and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number 1. They're also the sponsor of our hotline, and you can get through by calling 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, open 24/7 for the podcast listeners. You want to chime in, send a text to a Drew at the text box. Make sure you sign it if you want us to read your question or comment on the air, and we'll do so if you send a good one. Text box is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. The podcast is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Search for The Drive with Bill Cameron on your favorite podcasting platform. Rate, review, subscribe. It helps out. You can also go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. You can listen live at ESPNAU.com as well if you're not in the ESPN 106.7 listening area. But the podcasts and the text box are presented by our friends, including our buddy Derek at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
I haven't seen Derek in a while.
Shout out to Derek. Yeah. I was just talking to Derek the other day, actually. So it was during the baseball postseason.
Oh, okay.
College baseball postseason. I was chatting with Derek a little bit. So, yeah, it sounds like he's doing well.
We need to get to our first break. Yep, Ed, hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Friday Drive.
Bending, stretching, walking. The simple moves in life are a real challenge with joint pain.
At 888-382-7502 or email thedrive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Friday afternoon. Let's get right to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Ed is up first. Hey, Ed.
Hey, guys. How are y'all doing?
Doing fine.
Good to hear from you, Ed.
Yeah, it's been a little while since I've been able to call, but y'all talking about the rain, and I was just going to mention real quick, I've got a fairly small cup above ground planters that I made, and all I've got my tomatoes, all they've been loving this rain, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my son said the same thing. He's they're going crazy.
Oh, goodness gracious. And you know, there's a lot of difference in the taste of homegrown tomatoes.
Oh, yeah, no question about it.
Yeah. But I was going to ask y'all a couple of things about a couple of other writers or a couple of things that I'd read. Mm-hmm. Do y'all know a writer named Taylor Jones with Auburn Wire, AU Wire?
Yeah. I know Taylor. I think we both know Taylor.
We've seen Taylor before. I think he was at one point.
We worked with him.
Yeah, back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure he's a great guy. But did y'all, about 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, he put out the coaches in the SEC from 1 to 14.
Mm-hmm.
1 to 14, and
I didn't see that.
It was a couple of more predictable. He had Nick Saban at 1 and
Kirby at 2.
No.
Oh yeah.
No, keep going.
Okay, I was going to say you'd figure the guy that won the last two national championships would be in the top couple. Maybe Brian Kelly too. Then.
Yeah. Where do you think he had Kirby?
I can't imagine Kirby not being in the top two, having won the last two national titles, whether you like him or not.
Was he not 3 either?
He was number 6.
That's pretty funny.
Kirby Smart, five coaches.
Wow.
I'm serious. I just didn't know if anybody had noticed that. I know you can look it up. I wouldn't. And I was going to.
I guess
thing.
You know. I guess you could say, well, if 5 other guys with the talent that he has could do as well, but you know that's part of the deal of where you rank coaches is the ability to get the talent. Well, Kirby
and
definitely
how
does
come,
that.
How come nobody else has done it?
Yeah.
At Georgia before now, if it's so easy.
Yeah, I just thought I just really couldn't believe it. You know, I kind of looked at it, and I haven't had a chance to call. But then there was another outrageous article I read was from, it's called Right for Cal, you know, .com, California, our opponent. And these guys, they said, and it's like the preview for their season is Auburn. And according to them, we are made up entirely of 4 and 5 stars. And you would not believe that you think that SEC riders can be, you know, kind of mean. This guy just ripped into Hugh Freeze like you would not believe.
Well, that's one of the things Dan was alluding to is I wouldn't be shocked to have some guys sort of coming after Hugh Freeze at media days. Some of the, I don't know whether they be national or covering some other schools that just feel like, you know, that it's and again, this is what I think they would say is they feel like it's, you know, ridiculous that he even gets a shot to be back in the SEC. So I've heard some people talking like that. So I'm not shocked that especially someone that far removed could have those opinions.
Yeah. If you get a chance, writeforcal.com, and it's pretty rough. But anyway, one other thing I was just going to ask, and I'll hang up and listen on this one, is what y'all think about what's going on in the softball program? Is everything okay, or, and such as that? If you could just update me on that, because I've heard there might be some problems over there. But thank you, sir.
Well, there obviously has been, some of the top players have left, and there have been some comments. We're talking about some of those a couple of days ago. Auburn's brought in a couple of highly touted transfers and brought in an assistant coach as well. It's hard to say that everything's just fine. I mean, obviously there's some things going on and some changes are happening. And everybody obviously hasn't been happy. So, I mean, I guess, we'll just have to wait and see how things turn for next year. But there were some internal strife.
I mean, I think there was already pressure on Mickey Dean, I think, to keep this thing to improve on this past season in order to keep everyone confident in the program, especially when you think about the change in leadership since Mickey Dean arrived, right? I mean, you have a new president,
right.
New president, new AD,
right?
And for any coach in that situation, I think the pressure to maintain your program success, or if you haven't had very much success, find some, goes up. The reports from Carly on social media, and it's worth pointing out, she's deleted the tweets, so maybe she's. I don't want to put words in her mouth or anything like that, but maybe she's had second thoughts about what she said or decided it wasn't worth it to fight this out on social media. But the reports are troubling enough to add to the pressure.
Sure. Yeah,
I think they're the program.
Oh, you can't ignore them.
I mean, now you probably have people looking around inside Auburn University, making sure things are being handled the right way. Everything's being handled the right way within the program, and there's also the pressure to win on top of that. So yeah, it doesn't make you feel better about what's going on. It could be just one player with the who had a disappointing experience, but it also could be something larger than that.
Appreciate the call, Ed.
Great stuff, Ed.
Yeah, good hearing from you.
I am still looking to find this list. I don't want to smear Taylor Jones. I'm not saying Ed was wrong, but I want to find this list.
Yeah, I want to see if it was his list or somebody else.
I do want to put the disclaimer on that. Neither Bill nor I saw the article in question. That Ed was asking.
If someone came up with a list that had Kirby sixth,
I feel like we would
among SEC coaches.
Would have heard about it, right?
Well,
I feel like we would have heard about it. I don't know.
Normally, you would think
so. We'll see. Let's check that out.
All right. I tell you what, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll continue looking for that. We'd love to hear from you. And right now, the phone line's lighting up. We'll be back with more of your phone calls here on the Friday Drive.
ESPN 1067 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the control room with Drew at... He's at the controls. That's why it's the control room.
I go with studio, but you can call it
control
room.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I don't know why I said control room.
Because we call them control rooms at
work. Well, see, I was going to say in the studio, and I said control room. Then it's like, what am I going to say,
Drew's in the control room in the day job. That's what's going on.
That's what it is. Drew's in the, that's right.
We use the control room.
I'm in master control.
You're in master control, which is absolutely. Have we pulled the curtain back enough? Engineering Online, our good folks out there.
Yeah. But,
get a master's degree in an engineering field there at Auburn University if you want. There's lots of different.
Yeah, and we can help you be able to do that without having to attend classes.
Yeah. I mean, you're still going to have to, like, watch the lectures and understand what's going on. I mean,
yeah, you're going to have to pass the material. That's true.
Yeah, you got
to figure out.
How many different master's degrees are we talking about these days?
Oh, there are
13, 14 of them? Like, different programs?
Well, there's seven different engineering curriculum. So, I mean, multiple ones in each.
Wow. All right,
so aerospace, chemical,
busy,
civil, computer, industrial, so, mechanical, materials,
and all that.
I know them all.
You said aerospace?
That's at the beginning alphabetically.
One of my favorites. Yeah.
Oh yeah. All right. Welcome back in. We were looking. We did find the article by Taylor Jones.
Should clarify.
I think there was a little misunderstanding. What Taylor did? Taylor just had a story about head coaches and the number of wins that they have in their careers. And that's where, yes, Nick Saban has the most wins of any coach. Kirby Smart is sixth among coaches in wins, but in 8 years.
Kirby Smart has coached about 100 games.
He's
right,
as a head coach? Less than 100 games.
Okay.
In 96 games, he's won 81.
Kirby Smart's first year was 16. Is that right? His first season at Georgia was the 16th year, I believe.
Yeah, so that's right. And you had the 2020 season, which was a shortened season. So, yes, in 96 games, he has won 81. That ranks him two wins behind Hugh Freeze. But Hugh Freeze has 43 losses.
Weren't a bunch of those losses in the first year, too? Like, weren't of those 15
signed in? I don't know a bunch.
Five of them?
Did he have five? Sort of like Nick Saban's. Yeah. Nick Saban had six in his first year at Alabama. And Nick Saban is he is so far ahead. Brian Kelly is over 100 wins behind Nick Saban.
Kirby's had a playoff contender every year since 17. So it would make sense that five of those 10 losses or so.
And Nick Saban's had a playoff contender in just about every year since 08.
Georgia lost a couple of games in the 20 season, right? So they weren't in playoff contention in the COVID shortened year. And then they responded to that by winning
back-to-back national championships.
The following two national titles.
Yeah, so that's what it is. It's not that he was rated.
Very little opinion
ranked
was utilized.
The number six. He has the sixth most wins.
Yeah, Lane Kiffin, Hugh Freeze, Jimbo Fisher, Brian Kelly.
And Nick Saban.
Saban are the five coaches in the SEC.
That have more wins.
In their career.
And they better, you know, Hugh Freeze and Lane are only a few wins ahead of Kirby.
And the other two, Jimbo has a national championship, not at Texas A&M, but he has one as a head coach. Kirby's already got two, and as we said at the beginning of the show, they're the favorites right now to win a third straight, which would be, again, I mean, it's hard to do things that, I mean, let alone, it's hard to do things Saban hasn't done.
Right.
Like, forget about that list.
You're absolutely right about that. As far as football coaches, college football coaches, that's about the only thing that he hasn't done that someone else has a chance of doing.
And it seems somewhat.
Because if Kirby doesn't do it now, it's going to take, you know, at least two more years after this year for whoever wins it this year to try to win three straight.
Yeah, although not just in college sports, but around, I mean, pro sports too. I mean, they'll tell mm-hmm. you. Although there's so much more turnover to the roster in college sports. In pro sports, you'll hear about, like, when Kobe's Lakers were going for a third straight title and ran out of steam in the playoffs, or when LeBron's Heat were, you know, when they were going for a third straight championship. Even the Warriors, right, had a stumble. I mean, When I guess mostly in basketball,
three-peats are tough,
and I mean Georgia is the odds-on favorite to win a third title right now, but there are some question marks about that team that could prevent that. But that's
they have a new offensive coordinator.
They do have a new offensive coordinator.
Auburn folks familiar, and Georgia folks familiar with their new offensive coordinator.
It's a familiar group of names on that coaching staff, mm-hmm. right? Because Muschamp's not the full DC, right? But he's got a title, doesn't he, on the defense? And then
I thought he was the full DC.
Oh, is he full DC? Okay, so I mean, if it's Muschamp and Bobo, I mean, mm-hmm. it's a pair of very familiar names for the Georgia Bulldogs, and a couple of guys Kirby Smart has known for most of his life.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, which is, I mean, that was, wasn't that the story originally?
Was, I mean,
that,
wasn't Bobo like his roommate, and Muschamp was sort of like his mentor?
I believe the story was that they were either with Muschamp or Bobo, there was reluctance to hire him from Kirby Smart because they're so close personally that there was concern that making the relationship professional could harm things, and maybe the things are going so well for Georgia, they've decided let's roll the dice on that and see how we and see how things turn out. But yeah, that is the gold standard at the moment. It's been a long time, right, since you looked at college football and said any program at Alabama was the gold standard. It's been over a decade. The second national championship and the way Georgia's been able to restock the roster going into this year. I mean, at the moment, that's the team everybody's gunning for.
I guess I thought Glenn Schumann left. He's still there. So Will is the
co-DC,
co-defensive coordinator.
And Munkin went to the OC. Munkin went to Baltimore
went to the NFL.
I would think he is somebody who, if Baltimore has a good season, and even I think it could depend. I mean, we'll see how much it matters if Baltimore has a good season or not. I think he could be a target for college jobs.
Sure.
If you wanted to be. I mean, it's a former Southern Miss head coach,
now
a guy with offensive coordinator experience at Georgia, including a national championship, NFL experience as an offensive coordinator. Like, that seems to me, if he wanted to, you know, there are some big programs could be hunting this offseason for a new coach. Maybe Todd Munkin is working on his candidacy by taking that Baltimore
job. It absolutely won't hurt him. I mean, unless they're just terrible. But, I mean, that's still – a lot of times – guys go to the league, and even if it's not great there, he's made a good reputation, you know, last couple of years at Georgia.
Every year you go into a season with Lamar Jackson as your quarterback, there's some risk. You hold your breath. Oh, I hope he can stay healthy because of the style of play. But when he's healthy, he can make an offensive coordinator look really good. There's a guy.
Oh, you're right about that.
There's a guy. And Bobby Petrino's had other guys helping him out too. There's an offensive coordinator at College Station that looked exceptionally smart the year Lamar Jackson was just vaporizing people en route to the Heisman Trophy.
334-321-1390. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about here on the Friday edition of The Drive. I see we've got Wimbledon on on the TV.
A little Wimbledon action. I think we're in the deep into the – is this a semis maybe or the quarters?
I was thinking at least the quarters.
It is the. I think they're coming up on the round of 16.
Yeah, okay.
So this is the winner of this one. It's
will be in the quarter.
Yeah, it's Djokovic on the main court, center court, there at Wimbledon. The times are always strange with the.
Seem strange to us.
Well, that's true. When there's majors or grand slams in other parts of the world, right? Like the times can, you know, whether it's the French.
We're spoiled and think they should play them. At our convenience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, next weekend, I believe, is the Open Championship. The British Open is either next weekend or the weekend after is the British Open. And it's when you live on the West Coast especially, you just wake up and it's like, oh, there was a winner. Like, it's 9 a.m. in California on Sunday morning, and the Open Championship has been decided. Like, they've already got a winner.
All right. Here's one for you. What is the oddest time that you have ever watched a sporting event?
I mean, I've watched the Australian Open final for tennis before. I've gotten up early.
I mean, years ago, I've gotten up early to watch Wimbledon.
So
I don't follow it nearly like I used to.
Yeah, Wimbledon, you get the Saturday. Yeah, the Sunday morning or the Saturday morning final. That can be really exciting. The Australian Open gives you stranger times than Wimbledon. The Australian Open final, if you choose to watch the men's final, it starts around 3 a.m. Central Time on a Saturday night, Sunday morning, and it's exciting tennis. But that's okay. Here's a super nerdy one, Bill. So a couple of guys on the beat are fans of professional wrestling, especially Japanese. The events they do and the big events overseas. Events in Japan of any kind, sporting events in Asia and Japan start at insane times.
Oh yeah,
here in America. So yes, you will see on social media sites when there's a big Japanese professional wrestling event, there will be a flurry of activity from sports writers and media nerds at like 2-3 in the morning on a random Sunday night or Monday night, as they write about their.
I was going to say we can ask Brian Matthews on Monday. You know, when
soccer.
When, yes. Yeah. Yeah, what times, you know, he's gotten up stayed up to watch.
You know, let's spin this locally, Bill. We were talking yesterday about the fact that Walker Kessler is going to be one of the 12 Americans on the U.S. men's national team in the World Cup of basketball, the FIBA World Cup later this summer, which is a good sign for the chances that Walker could be included on the Olympic team next year and possibly play for the chance to win a gold medal for the United States in Paris. But the FIBA World Cup later this summer is going to be in Japan and the Philippines. So I suspect anyone who wants to watch Walker Kessler and the rest of Team USA, you know, those games could be on at very odd hours.
That's what happens like during Olympics when they're around the world. I mean, if you want to watch something live, now you used to not be able to. I mean, you know, there weren't networks that were carrying it years and years ago. But the last few Olympics, if you wanted to watch some things live, you had the opportunity to watch them in the middle of the night.
Remember when the United States, here's an Olympic basketball one, when the United States, so the 04 Olympics is the Olympics where America doesn't win in basketball after multiple gold medals in a row. And so 08 is the redeem team. That's the one that Kobe and LeBron and Carmelo and some other guys, you know, decided to come back and play for the, I think Kobe especially, but other players are cited too as big parts of that team. Those Olympics were in, 08 would have been Sydney, Australia, I think. And like 08 would have been, but the gold medal game was very late into the night. And I remember being part of a group that went from the bar home, like, you know, we're talking late on a Saturday night. Might have been a Friday, but it was late on a weekend, early in the morning on a weekend to watch the United States beat, I think it was Spain. I don't remember exactly who they took down either. But watch the United States win the gold medal in the Olympics. And yeah, you're right. The Olympics tend to bring out those really odd start times and things.
All right, let's get back to the Kia of Auburn hotline before we get to our final break of hour number one. And Tex is up next. Hey, Tex.
Well, I'm glad you Kessler is an American on the U.S. national team. I hope they don't have anybody else than an American.
He checked his papers.
So anyway, when you mention what's the weirdest time you've ever watched the game, I actually watched Auburn play on a Sunday one day. Actually, it wasn't one day. It was at, I think it was 11 o'clock start or 11:30 against Ole Miss. And we were in Bora Bora, and it was Sunday morning at...
okay, because I was trying to think. I didn't remember Auburn playing a game at that odd an hour. So you were the one that was in a completely different time zone. Yeah, okay.
Yes, it was several different time zones away. Cindy and I were sitting on the beach at 4 o'clock with an iPad watching the game, and the security came up and wanted to know what we were doing. And we told them we were watching football. And they said, who's playing? And I said, Auburn, Ole Miss. And they went, where are their teams from? they thought it was soccer.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, you say football at a lot of places around the world, and that's exactly what they're going to think.
So they actually sat and watched part of the game with us. So, and we did win that day.
And I'm sure you were able to give them some pointers because they probably didn't have any idea what was going on.
They didn't have much of a clue as to what was going on. So
that's great.
By the way, once you cross that timeline thing is called, like I just went
international blind. Dateline.
International Dateline. You have to change some settings on your computer to make them think that you're in Los Angeles. And I had a computer guy teach me how to do that so that I could watch the game while I was over there.
You could tell the computer you were in America?
That we told him we were in America, and we got to watch the game on Good. ESPN.
That's cool.
So, hey, look, just a little thing on this, and I heard Ed ask about the softball. I take a lot of that with kind of a grain of salt when a player is very strong in their comments about why they're leaving or what's going on, and I hope that it was removed because maybe it may have been somewhat of an overreaction. And as a been around a lot of former players and a lot of players in my life, and people get angry and sometimes say things and then take them back. But I will tell you, I played for a guy that not a whole lot of people liked. Coach Nix was not the most popular guy in the world, and you can get together with any group of Lettermen that you want that played for him, and you're going to get about 70% that didn't like him. I happened to love him, and he had a great impact on my life. He taught me a lot about overcoming adversity, but I also understand some of the things. And I've got friends that were on the 76 team that went to the World Series with Coach mm-hmm. Nix. So I hope it's not. I hope we're not running into another problem with our softball team. Softball's become very competitive in the Southeastern Conference.
Yep.
So I thought we were making strides, and hopefully that this is something that we can all get past. I will tell you, I don't think the current AD, if there are any problems, would waste very much time pulling the trigger. So I don't think he's going to put up with a whole lot. That being said, football, I can't believe it's almost football season. And that we're a hard sellout, but can't believe I got an email that I can buy single game tickets.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, it's quite interesting that you're able to do that. Other than that, sorry I hadn't had a chance to call in. Was really hoping LSU wouldn't win the College World Series, and I didn't want Florida to win.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I didn't want Florida to win either. I didn't want Florida to win either, so I didn't have much of a choice. As a matter of fact, we're going to dinner in a little bit, and I'll probably get ragged a little bit. But I get to say, hey, we took 2 out of 3 from them.
That's right.
And run ruled them. So doesn't mean we won the national championship. Just means we beat the national champion in our 3-game series with them. So, but I'm glad to see that Skeens is going to move on and go play somewhere else.
Yeah, no kidding.
He's a dude.
No, right? You're right.
Anyway, that's, I just want to share my story about watching the game on a Sunday.
Cool, Tex. Right. Hey, Tex, do you think right, it's – we were just talking about it. I think there was a draft analyst, not ESPN, but one of the other websites, who still thinks it could be Langford or Cruz instead of Skeens with the first overall pick. You've seen a lot of Dylan Cruz, and Wyatt Langford was one of the best players in college baseball this year as well. You think a team making a mistake going with one of the outfielders instead of Skeens?
It depends on which team's making the call. I've mentioned before when Skeens was pitching at Plainsman Park, a friend of mine who was a scout that was there was on the phone yelling at the people in the front office saying, I don't care what you have to do, you need to draft this guy. And they were talking about Skeens. So I would tell you, look, the game at the big league level now is a lot about launch angle and driving the ball and power hitting and speed, by the way, big guys that can really run. I think it just depends on your team. But if it was me, if it was me in the front office, I don't care how many pitchers we had. A guy that throws 100 in the 7th and 8th inning, who has a changeup at 90 that looks exactly the same as the fastball, is a guy that can pitch in the big league.
Hey, a guy who is the best pitching prospect in the last 15 years, I don't see how you pass on him.
It's exciting because it's a year where you have 3 guys that seemingly would go first overall in most drafts.
And you know what? Matt reminded me a while ago that, hey, you know, we were talking about two-way players yesterday. Paul Skeens was an All-American hitter.
Yeah.
At Air Force.
People,
I mean, the guy's a career 367 hitter with 24 homers and 400 college at bats.
Didn't he catch? Wasn't he? I mean,
he was mostly a DH.
Okay, I was going to say because that's somebody who I'm told to be focused. If he focused just on his hitting,
I'd give him a chance to swing the bat every once in a while too. Of course, that's such a valuable arm. I don't know.
Well, I wouldn't put that arm with a bat in his hand.
No. Well, it's going to be the back arm. That's
but. You see how many guys get hit now on the back elbow?
Yeah, I know.
So, I tell you, but the thing about Cruz is if you look at him from a physicality standpoint, not just the talent that he has with his physical skills, he looks like a big leaguer. He's He's really.
Oh, they're both.
Really,
oh, that's yeah. That's one the thing.
That they all do. We got to run. Text. Great stuff, man. It's good hearing from you. We need to get to our final break. Stick with us. Hour number one here on The Drive. Experience and knowledge from the pros.
Russell DeWitt Center. Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Friday Drive with Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls, and hour number two of the Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And we welcome your calls on the Kia of Auburn hotline, Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one, and the number to get you through is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform, search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center. It's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Let's jump right to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Bill is up first. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys, I was listening to Tex on that last call, and, you know, I was watching that LSU pitcher last week, and you had to wonder, where's this guy been? I mean, why have you heard anything about him? You know, because he's a really phenomenal pitcher. And the commentators on one of the World Series game we're talking about, now that when he was at the service academy, he had to put so much time into other things other than baseball. And, of course, when he got to LSU, that all changed, and there was so much more time being put into his development as a baseball player, pitcher, whatever it should be. And, that was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. I've been around almost as long as you have, Bill. And like Tex said, this guy's in like an eighth inning, throwing the ball like 100 miles an hour.
What a hoss he really is. I mean, you talk about, you know, that's something we used to, talk about, those guys that could get out there and just give you, I mean, the same thing late innings that they did first. And he wasn't really holding anything back early either. I mean, he's just big and strong and able to keep it up.
And, you know, it's control. I mean, it's not like he got wild at the end of in the late innings. I watched a lot of baseball back in my Atlanta days, but not so much now. But I just couldn't turn that game off watching that guy pitch. It was really something. But the commentators really of that particular game made a great point. You know, he was being able to be that. Put more time into baseball at LSU than he could at the Air Force Academy.
Right.
So I guess this guy just came out of nowhere, you know?
He was really, really good at Air Force. I mean, as a freshman, he was more of a hitter. He only pitched. He was 1-1, didn't start a game. He was their closer as a freshman. He was 1-1 with 11 saves and a 2.70 ERA. His first year at Air Force, his second year, I mean, he was 10-3 with a 273 while he was hitting 13 homers and batting 367 over 2 years. So, but yes, he still had the cadet life as well. I mean, so that's, yes, it's not like, being a student athlete, being a cadet and an athlete is quite a lot to have on your plate.
I asked Tex, because I knew of Paul Skeens, but I hadn't watched that much of his work at the Air Force Academy these first 2 years, and I knew he won an award because he was such a good hitter on top of being a pitcher. His I think it was the Olerud. He won that like his first year at Air Force. That was when I heard there was a
You know, he hit 410 as a freshman.
Yeah, superstar two-way player at the Air Force Academy. But, no, I'm under the impression that, being able to being able to prioritize baseball more as an SEC student athlete than you can as a junior at the Service Academy, which is also where your officer training starts to increase and you're starting to take on more responsibilities within the service. You're also working towards your degree and to be, student athlete, like Service Academy student athletes to me have so much on their plate. And I know they get assistance, wherever the university can help them, but still it's so much to, especially for someone who has pro aspirations. And it sounds like for Paul Skeens, being able to prioritize baseball over these last few months and certainly in the off season leading up to this year, it's paid dividends for him.
Yeah, one last thing before I go, taking a hard left turn here. I didn't get to hear a lot of the first hour, but I did get part of that. Talking about football, and do you honestly believe? I really don't think he will. But let's just say guys like Kirby Smart, Nick Saban. Obviously, the big age difference between those two. Nick Saban. Like Bryant, like Woody Hayes, those guys, that's all they knew. That was their whole life. And I don't think a guy like Kirby Smart and guys his age, like Ryan Day, if I got that name right, at Ohio State,
yeah, that's
and
right.
The younger coaches, I don't think these guys are going to run themselves into the ground coaching into the 70s. What's your thought about that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Ryan Day, it might not be his decision, right? I mean, that's the craziest like firestorm around a coach. You know, the belief that he only loses one conference game a year at most, but it's Michigan, and so that there's suddenly some folks who believe, and he also inherited an excellent situation, which I think is worth pointing out with Ryan Day. But no, I wonder if technology has made it easier. I mean, we saw some coaches. Bobby Bowden went really late into his career.
Yeah, the thing is, though, I wonder with the climate, with everything we have going on now with the transfer portal, with NIL, that how much that could wear on a coach.
We saw some basketball coaches decide to walk
away. We saw
some older,
I mean, big-time, prominent coaches decide to step down. I think it is a younger man's game, the coaching. I think it's less likely that you're going to see, coaches coaching into their 70s the way Nick Saban has. I'm really surprised that, Nick has been able to stay as, getting after it 24/7 the way he has.
Speaking from experience, because I remember you told me things along these lines before. The prospect of traveling a lot for work becomes less attractive the older you get.
Yeah. Right?
Like that seems like a thing, and so
I can attest to that.
Yeah. Like the prospect of doing a lot of traveling, and if you're a head coach, there's going to be quite a bit of travel, quite a bit of recruiting.
You've got family. I mean, Nick's got grandkids now, but I mean, he's still very driven. But I wonder how many coaches will be. And of course, I don't think there will be any who are successful as Nick has been. Kirby's the only one that appears to have a shot.
Yeah, but you look at a guy like Kirby Smart. He's relatively still a young man.
Oh, he is.
And he's got
a lot
of
money. He's in his 40s. Yeah.
I just don't see Kirby Smart running himself into the ground to break any records. I think he'll probably win a few more national championships, probably win a few more SEC championships. But I 5 years, I see this guy just enjoying life rather than run himself in the ground.
Here's the thing, though. Like maybe for
some
of these
guys, it's almost impossible for them to leave it.
That's what I was going to say, is that I wonder for some of these guys, if they could do anything, would they be doing the thing they're doing right now?
Right.
If given the chance to do anything, would they be coaching a team that could win a college football national championship? And when they take that away, maybe it's like Jay Leno, right? You take the Tonight Show away, and he's looking for another way to get back on TV, or he's looking for another way to get the Tonight Show job back. So maybe some of these guys, it's not going to be a retirement, or retirement doesn't seem like an attractive prospect, because if they could do anything in the world, they'd be doing the thing they can do right now.
Yeah, that's true. And like I said, I just think that these younger coaches will I just think they'll be running themselves into the ground trying to break a record. You win four or five national championships, you win a couple of some SEC championships, and you got a lot of money. You're still a relatively young
man. Yeah, they will be set for life. You're right about that. The ones that have won big, you know, that's not going to be the reason they continue. It's not because they need another paycheck.
Yeah. All right, guys, enjoy the show. Wiggle.
Great stuff, Bill. Appreciate the call. That's a really good question. I mean, it seems like it's less likely, but then yeah, you think about coaches and they want to coach.
I guess the other question would be, is there a risk of the older you get, the harder it is to relate to 17, 18-year-olds? And could that be a drawback in recruiting?
For a lot of folks, yes.
Eventually, you know, that's because it's a job where you need to be.
You better be able to.
Your job, you know, requires you to be able to relate to the young generation, no matter how old you get. Like, you need to be able to relate to those folks.
Or, Kirby's 47.
Yeah, and he seems like he's got we'll see, but he seems like he's got a lot of football left in him. And if you
like you said earlier, I mean, he has a chance to do something that nobody's done, and that is win three straight national championships legit on the field. Not somebody awarding them the title.
Three undisputed college football national championships in a row would be an unprecedented. I mean, we saw Miami, we saw USC, Bama at its peak. Nobody's done that.
Nope.
Like, I mean, it's that would be a yeah. I mean, to be able to do that would put. I mean, that cements, like we were saying, when you can do something Saban hasn't done, like that. That's you know, it's rare to find accomplishments that are within reach for active college football coaches, where you can say, well, Nick Saban hasn't done that one. Three national championships for Kirby would accomplish that.
334-321-1390. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise as we're here on this Friday afternoon. Let's go ahead and get to our first break this hour. Come on in and join us.
Hey, I'm Caroline.
ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls, and back to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Mitch is next. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to chime in a little bit on the, strange places you've watched sporting events.
Sure.
Let's see. In 1998, I was stationed in Korea, and I was coming back home for my mid-tour, and I stopped in Hawaii because I had a friend there at Hickam, and I watched, I think it was Auburn LSU on Jefferson Pilot in the day room. I think it was 11 o'clock local game, and I watched it at 7 a.m. In Hawaii. So that was kind of weird. But that same year, the Auburn-Bama game, I believe AFKN broadcast it, and that was on like a Sunday morning. I don't remember what time they played that game, if it was a night game or what, but we got to watch it. But it was Sunday, and we watched it in our little bar area we had there. And then the Super Bowl that year was on a Monday morning, and they actually gave us the day off to watch the Super Bowl. And we got no commercials, you know, because, you know, back then they had some pretty good commercials back then. We got no commercials. We got, I guess, public service announcements on AFKN. But one of the officers that worked with us, his wife recorded the commercials and mailed him the VHS tape. So we got to see the commercials from the, I guess it'd be the 1999 Super Bowl.
Okay. I'd never heard of anybody doing that, but yeah, back then, they seemed a whole lot better.
Well, they weren't on the internet yet either, you know. That's true. If they were in, you know, glitchy sort of 56K modem sort of deal. You know, you couldn't
dial up.
Yeah, you couldn't watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, we got to see a lot of sporting events over there. I had a first sergeant that was really big into NASCAR, and he would wake us up, you know, on like Monday morning, early to watch like big races and stuff. And, you know, we wouldn't have to like really go to work or anything like that, because we were hanging out with him watching the race. But, yeah, it was totally different over there. My only regret is that because Auburn wasn't very good in 1998. My uncle told me that. I should have stayed in Korea and done my 30 days in the Far East.
Yeah, that was not a good season.
Right, right. I mean, I came back for the Tennessee game, and that's the year they won the national championship. And I think they beat us like 17-6, or it was something. But two of the touchdowns, one was a fumble that they recovered when we were going in to score, and they ended up scoring it like a scoop and score. And then, but yeah, I think they only actually scored 3 points on us.
Yeah, the Auburn offense was the problem.
Yeah. Because the Tennessee defense, I think, scored 14 points that day of their 17 that beat us. So, but yeah, that was a great time over there in Korea. Would love to go back someday. But those are my weird places for watching sporting events, guys. War Eagle, we'll talk to you later.
Appreciate the call, Mitch. 334-321-1390. Yeah, I haven't been in places like that, like Tex and Mitch have. I mean, my most odd ones would be like things like Olympics or Wimbledon early in the morning. No, we took one.
I was going to say, yeah, that was we're back.
We took a little early break and then.
I wasn't sure about the COVID because the end of the first hour we had the layup there, but no, we're back on schedule.
Yeah, So if you had an odd or if there was a sporting event that you watched at an odd time.
And I would think that's
one of the things we were talking
about.
Yeah,
I would think for folks who were traveling internationally, you know, Mitch and other people who were in the military, you know, having to track a game back at home.
Yeah, about if you're, I mean, having the opportunity to either, you know, vacation or something like that internationally, trying to keep up with it's tough. It is tough keeping up with anything that's going on. Even doing a thing like, going on a cruise in January during basketball season, trying to just keep up with what's going on sometimes is really, really tough.
Yeah, boxing and MMA will do events overseas, but so much of it is targeted for the American audience. So when, like, I think when Tyson lost to Buster Douglas, that fight was in Japan, and I think it was at a weird hour. Either it was at a weird hour in America or it was a weird hour. It started at a strange time in Japan for the American audience. I think that might have been what they did. Like they started the fight at 4 or 5 in the morning or something so that it would be more palatable for an American.
So they'd have a larger audience.
Yeah, so Americans could watch it at a more reasonable time. And
because it was pay-per-view, right? Or was it?
I think that would have been pay-per-view. Yeah, I mean,
yeah still, so that late, makes late sense. 80s, yeah. You want to have it at a time where people are going, yeah, it's worth me spending the money.
They had to balance it out, right? The fight's in Tokyo.
Right.
But you want Americans to watch it on pay-per-view live, and so they had to figure out some strange time. I know the there have been big boxing matches in the Middle East now that the UAE and Abu Dhabi are really like they're competing to be hosts for major combat sports events along with Vegas. So yeah, you'll get fights at strange times because they sort of have to.
I'm trying to remember the Rumble in the Jungle with Ali and Foreman. That was at an odd time, and there was no way.
Yeah,
that was way back. You know what? We were watching the teletype for updates.
I was gonna say, would they have closed circuited something? Could they have closed circuited that?
If they did, nobody I knew had access to it. But there were a few of us that were either at or in contact with folks at the station, at the radio station, checking the teletype after each round, saying, it was scored, you know, so Ali gets it 10-9, or Foreman gets it, you know, that was wild. So that was a tough one. So things like that, yeah, that was...
Because that's no. Now kids don't know. I'm throwing closed circuit out there, like it's
yeah,
a term
and they're like close. Yeah, and you're right. There are a lot of people going, "What?
What in the world?" So pre pay per view, Bill, and I've never experienced a closed circuit event. I've just heard about this. Before pay per view style events, boxing matches, WrestleMania, you know, the events that are now commonly seen as pay per view events, they would be broadcast to movie theaters, right? It was theaters.
Places with projectors.
Yeah, theaters yes. would have them, and they would pay for the rights to closed circuit it, and there would be, I mean,
towards the I think it wasn't until the middle late 80s that it started to be like sort of at home pay per view started to take over the
maybe
market,
it was, maybe the Rumble in the Jungle was, as I'm reading it, said it was one of the most watched televised events of the time. So I guess maybe we were just too poor because it was 70. It was 74.
But I think it was just in theaters at that point. Yeah, so maybe it wasn't in a theater near you, or maybe that theater was adults. You know, was maybe kids maybe weren't welcome. Yeah. But
or like I said, I just didn't have the money or didn't want to spend the money.
Second paragraph of the viewership part of the Wikipedia about the Rumble in the Jungle. United States estimated 3 million closed circuit viewers in 400 venues. They sold tickets at $20. Adjusted for inflation, that's a $120 ticket.
That's what I mean. That was a lot of money.
They grossed $60 million on that in one night. Inflation adjusted, that's a $400 million take for a boxing match just in closed circuits. Promoters and fighters got half of that money. So yeah. a nice little
Don King
chunk of change for Don King. And I'm sure some of that maybe found its way to Ollie and Foreman. Don King was able to
hopefully
take some of it too.
All right, let's get back to the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390. And Tom is up next. Hey, Tom.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing fine.
Hey, I'm another ex-military guy. I was in the Air Force stationed in Germany from 78 to 81 flying an OV-10. And the squadron I was in had a combat mission, and like everybody else over there at that time, we would be put into exercise status about every 3 months on a no-notice basis.
Mm-hmm.
It would start out on an early Monday morning. We'd get a knock on the door telling us to come to work. And for the next 3 or 4 days, we would be pretending we were in a combat situation. As a result of that, on Tuesday mornings, about 5 to 6 o'clock in the morning, everybody was in the squadron waiting to be told what they were going to do that day. And during football season, Tuesday morning in Germany is Monday night football,
right.
And Monday night football was on the intercom throughout the entire squadron. And so as we all just kind of sat around and drank coffee and twiddled our thumbs waiting to find out what we were going to do, we'd all sit around and listen to the Monday night football game on Tuesday morning.
That's cool.
That's really cool. Where were you in? Were you in Ramstein in Germany? Is there somewhere else they're doing the OV-10s?
The OV-10s when I was there were at Simbach, which is a little small town near Kaiserslautern.
My little brother was born when my folks were stationed in Ramstein. That in the late 90s, a little bit later than that, but love the German air bases.
Well, the countryside is beautiful over there. I'm not wild about the weather, but it was a very interesting place, a wonderful cultural experience.
Good hearing from you, Tom.
Thank you. Bye.
334-321-1390, and Robbie is next. Hey, Robbie.
Hey, gentlemen. How are y'all?
We're doing fine.
Good. Hey, I wanted to give my 2 cents worth on your topic. I didn't actually watch it. Dan will appreciate this because I was actually in Italy. I was in Positano, the Amalfi Coast, in an outdoor cafe with your coach at Knoxville High School, my brother-in-law, Coach Hicks. Dan.
Love John Hicks. One of my favorites.
So anyway, so we're in an outdoor cafe, and Auburn is playing in the Super Regional, and they're playing North Carolina. And so I said, I don't want to look. I don't even want to know what the score is. So he says, well, I'll pull it up. He looks at me and says, it's good news if you want to know the score. I said, okay. And that was the game where, like in the third inning, Auburn was up like 14 to nothing.
Yeah, had the 11 run first.
Right. And so I said, okay. So I ended up going back to the where we were staying and watched it. Didn't watch it, but kept up with the score on my phone in the middle of the night. And, of course, Carolina made a little bit of a comeback, if you remember, towards the end. And ended up, of course, Auburn ended up winning. But that was my
again, I didn't watch it.
I understand. Yeah, that's great though. The timing and everything.
And it's didn't mention this when you mentioned Coach Hicks, but the father of an Auburn Pharmacy School alum as well. Kristen is Kristen and Tommy are doing well for themselves down in down the Gulf Coast.
And his other daughter is a board certified veterinary dermatologist.
Is that right? Now that I didn't know. I knew her when she was younger, but I was not aware of that. That's a smart family. Family.
Carly is board certified veterinary dermatologist, and probably tomorrow will have her first child.
Oh, how about that? Well, yeah, to extend my best wishes to the
sure
Hicks clan
if you
see them again. I'm hoping I might see Tommy on a trip down to Florida at some point this summer.
The other thing I was going to say real quick, when y'all talking about pay-per-view, blah, 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 but when I had a friend that had a satellite dish way back in, that was like, if you knew somebody.
Those things were huge. They were huge.
It was like, that was your best friend.
Yeah.
And he calls me and he said, hey, dude, we can watch Tyson and Michael Spinks come over. We can watch it. So we do all this prep work and everything. And if you remember, we sat down. In 30 seconds, it was over.
Yeah.
Tyson knocked Spinks out in 30 seconds. It was like, now what do we do? It's over.
Oh, those heavyweight fights, and Tyson was involved in his fair share of them, where there was so much hype and so much excitement for 60 seconds of action at the most. It really was. Well, I mean, remarkable how those would turn out. And then you got a lot of stretch where it's like, all right, well, I guess we can replay the entire fight a few times tonight because we've got the airtime to we got the airtime to fill it.
Yeah, great to talk to you guys.
Hey, great call, Robbie.
All right. Thank you.
We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in. I mean, we didn't really. It's great. We end up going down some roads sometimes we never even saw. And it's been a lot of fun. You can join us, though, anything on your mind as we head into the final half hour here on the Friday Drive.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Friday edition of The Drive. Been a fun one. I mean, we just we're talking about a couple things. We started getting calls from folks that have either watched or tried to keep up with games at odd sporting events at odd times. I mean, more than I thought. I mean, because I was generally thinking, well, it would be if you're a fan of something that's going on internationally. But then we've had as many calls from folks that were somewhere else internationally trying to keep up with things that were going on, here in the States. So that's been a lot of fun. All right. As we mentioned a little earlier, it is not the busiest time in sports. Mentioned Wimbledon going on. It is the final weekend in Major League Baseball before the All-Star break. And you do have a marquee matchup. And I guess they could have figured this would be a pretty good one going into the All-Star break. But I don't know that that anybody in baseball said, here are the two teams with the best records in baseball by a long shot that are going to be playing leading into the end of the break. And that, of course, the Braves and the Rays.
Yeah, it should be a really exciting series this weekend with those two teams looking like, again, you want to be careful, looking like a World Series preview based on how these two teams have played, and they get to play in Tampa three games before the All-Star festivities get going on Monday. Like you just heard on our station, we're going to have the Home Run Derby and the All-Star game right here on ESPN 106.7. ESPN Radio does a great job with coverage of both events, so you're not going to want to miss that. Sunday night, the draft. So, yeah, big baseball weekend.
Yeah, I mean, the All-Star weekend, they've got the Futures game, and then they have the draft and the Home Run Derby and the All-Star game all coming up over the next few days.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, and exciting. I mean, the unofficial midpoint in the Major League Baseball season.
It's always a little after the midpoint. I always wonder, why not just go ahead and do it? Well, I guess the midpoint maybe comes right at the 4th of July.
Yeah,
that's also probably why they don't do it
exactly at the midpoint.
I think they also want to pick a time. You know, they have most of the month of July all to themselves, but you want to pick a time where you're one of the only things going on in the world of sports. These are the ESPYs right around this weekend because it was a time when all the athletes except baseball players were available to come to the ceremony, because if you do it during football or basketball season, maybe some of the marquee players cannot attend. But that was always the thinking, was, you know, it's an effort to find some programming. But yeah, should be an exciting weekend and a fun couple of nights next week for Major League Baseball.
Let's get back to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Jerry is up first. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. Who won the Braves game last night?
Well, the Braves snapped their they lost one. Did they play? I didn't think the Braves played last night.
Oh,
they've got the Rays.
Yeah, you almost had us there.
I mean, they
Jerry.
Won their last game. But
no one won the Braves game last night. The Braves won Wednesday night against the Guardians 8-1.
Yeah, I saw it, but. This game tonight's on Apple TV.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, yeah, you've got the Apple. You've got Apple tonight. I think it's a Fox game tomorrow. So yeah, you're getting.
I think that's
multiple networks.
I think that's Melanie, Melanie Newman, the former Troy announcer who does a lot of work with the Baltimore Orioles now, who does the Apple TV broadcasts this season. So yeah, a bit of a local tie there as the those are. I don't know exactly how many Apple TV games there are a week for Major League Baseball, but tonight's
usually Friday night.
Tonight's Rays Braves game, and that's only available on Apple TV, right? You can't watch it on the MLB TV, even if you're outside of the Braves or Rays areas. But that should be should be a big series.
Yeah, I was looking forward to it, but I have Bali, so I've been able to watch it most of the time. But I don't have Apple, so I'm gonna be hunting a place.
This will be that rare occasion where I'm able to watch. I've got Apple, but I don't have Bali, so yeah.
One other thing, Shohei Ohtani, isn't he a free agent at the end of the year?
Ohtani is a free agent at the end of this season. Yes, there's a belief that he could sign the biggest contract in the history of Major League Baseball.
He will get the biggest contract.
I was going to say, how many zeros do you think will be in that contract?
I mean, I think there's a chance he's worth. I mean, here's the thing. Do you treat it like you're getting a superstar hitter and an ace pitcher? Because if you calculate his contract value that way, and even take a little bit off that, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's worth $50 to $60 million a year in the eyes of the best teams in Major League Baseball, and he could be looking at an eight to ten year
contract. So you're looking at $500 million.
Yeah. I think I'm just offering 20% of the stake in the ownership of the Angels and signing to a lifetime contract.
Well, I mean, you offer him a big enough contract, you're going to have to give him the ownership stake of the Angels when you can't pay it. You're going to have to see if he's willing to take that instead. But, yeah, I mean, the Angels, I don't know if it's just about money, though. Like, I think that, you know, it's like when we talk about NIL deals with kids. Like, I don't know if the Angels, I don't know if it's a dollar amount that Shohei Ohtani is seeking from the Angels. I think it's proof on the field that the plan is working around Ohtani, while also compensating him like one of those top teams. I mean, a lot of folks think the conspiracy theory is that Ohtani wanted to be in California or on the West Coast, and because the NL didn't have a DH when he first got to baseball, he didn't seriously consider the Giants or the Dodgers then, but those are considered to be the top two options for him in free agency, especially now that the DH is in the National League and he has the option of being a pitcher and a DH. You know, I wonder if the Giants or the Dodgers just have more infrastructure within the organization to offer him than the Angels.
And people would think, oh, no, the Giants aren't going to be. The Giants were serious for Aaron Judge this past year. I mean, they're not going to back down easily.
How many World Series titles since 2010 for that organization versus pretty much any other organization? Like, they know what they're doing. Like,
yeah.
They got an eye for talent.
It'll be interesting to find out.
Oh, no kidding.
All right. See you later.
Appreciate the call, Jerry.
Wouldn't count the Padres out either.
I mean, they've spent a couple of bucks the last couple of years. Hasn't worked out yet, but they have. Spectre is up next. Hey, Spectre.
Hey, guys. Listen, just tuning in, so you may have already said it, but you were referring to something yesterday about something that's going to change, or you were having a change around there or something.
No, we said
we got big news coming on the horizon.
There's big news on the horizon.
Can't tell you anything else, just big news. Right. Big, exciting news is coming.
Has it got something to do with the show?
We can't tell you anything, Spectre. Big, exciting news is coming.
You tell me you don't know.
No, we're not telling you that.
I'm telling you that big, exciting news is coming, and you're not getting anything else out of me.
We're telling you we can't tell you yet.
Counselor?
Now, if I have to come down there and waterboard you, I will.
That's right. Yeah. Look, your tactics, the Geneva Convention applies to Auburn Network, all right? So you're not allowed to use enhanced interrogation tactics here. No, you know what? It's coming in the next – it's probably – I would say by this time next week, the news will be out.
Yeah,
and,
I would think
and it's,
so.
And it's exciting. I would sure think so. You know what? And it doesn't impact our show too much, but it's exciting news. It's exciting news for the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm thinking maybe a merge is coming about.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? There could be some cool stuff on the horizon in the next couple of days.
You ain't gonna tell me. You ain't gonna give me a hint at all.
Nah.
Okay, I'll go on to something.
The bosses are listening, Spectre.
Or they might be. Yeah.
All right. Well, I heard Mitch one day talk about the Chicago race, so I ain't gonna go into detail about that. But the guy that won it, he's a champion in his own league.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically knows how to street race, and he came on board to show these Cup Series drivers how to drive on the street.
You know, something just hit me, Spectre. Maybe that's what's been going on in Athens. All those guys are just planning for the next.
They're all getting ready for the street races. Is that what's that's?
Yeah, the Georgia football players.
Come on.
Yeah, right. But anyway, with that being said, yeah. The race was actually inexperience on the Cup drivers. They looked like people trying to learn how to drive on ice and snow.
I can see that. I mean, when you're used to just making turns and straight away and turn left.
They were hoping for clear weather, but it didn't really cooperate. I know there was. I don't know how much rain there was during the actual race, but it rained a lot that weekend, right?
Yeah. Well, it didn't seem to hurt the winner of the race, Shane. But, you know, another thing about that race, I don't know if you all watched it or not, but they shortened
the race.
They shortened the race by 25 laps. And at the time they shortened the race, the top five drivers had just pitted, and then they changed it to where it was going to be shortened, and that threw them in the back of the
field. Oh, yeah. No kidding.
But Shane and Larson were one of those top fives. They were in the top five before they shortened the race. But they managed to get back up front. Of course, you know, Larson and Chase Elliott are road course drivers. So they handled the courses pretty well. But the rest of them, I mean, it was just a weekend wrecking. I mean, it looked like an interstate snow blind out there.
Mm.
But this weekend, we're racing in Atlanta. And anybody that doesn't have anything else to do, get up there and watch them. It's Kevin Harvick's last Atlanta Motor Speedway race.
I'm sure there'll be a pretty good crowd.
Yeah, and you know the ratings, big rating success for NBC. The race, the street race in Chicago. So I think maybe we'll see how much that carries over. Hey, Spectre, do you think there could be more drivers from the foreign leagues? Because I mean, there's some highly competitive racing leagues outside of America. That have quality drivers at the top. I wonder how many of those guys might start coming to NASCAR and making more of an impact. I know it's already happening to an extent, but I mean, seeing a guy in his first race, and I know it was a street race, but seeing a guy go win, you know, makes me wonder how different the talent is in different leagues.
Well, I guarantee you, Shane, if this hadn't been a street race, I don't think he'd have been in he wouldn't have been in the race. But being a street race, he said, yeah, I'll give it a try, you know. So, yeah, I see other drivers that have come from Indy-style driving.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple now that are in the Cup Series. And matter of fact, Jimmy Johnson left NASCAR, retired, and went to Indy Cup racing and did awful. And now he's back in the Cup Series driving at a limited time. But, yeah, it depends on the driver. I mean, some drivers can handle the different courses, the different type of cars, and some of them can't. But it remains to be seen what will happen later. I don't know if they're going to continue this street racing or not. But if they do, they'll have to make sure they do it not in the rainy season anyway.
Yeah, you're right.
But anyway, that's all I got. I'll be tuning in to see what the changes are coming up.
Yep, stay tuned, Spector. Appreciate the call.
All right, buddy.
Have a good weekend. All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon of the week. Stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
So you want to know what...
390, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Final few minutes of the drive here on this Friday afternoon with Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. We'll be back Monday. Brian Matthews should be joining us. And, yeah, we'll get... I bet Brian has gotten up or stayed up to watch some soccer in the wee hours. Don't you?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, I mean, especially...
I mean, he's serious.
Following the Euro Leagues and the Premier League and stuff like that, I believe there's probably... ample reason to believe that Brian Matthews is someone who looking forward to talking to Brian about everything going on. We got media days coming up.
Yeah,
recruiting news on the horizon probably.
Well, we haven't talked to Brian since the recruiting news over the holiday with the addition of DJ Barber and then Cam Coleman opting for Texas A&M, and you know we're getting closer to Big Cat and. I wonder when we're going to learn who the representatives are going to be at SEC Media Days. May not be by Monday. So we'll get Brian's thoughts on that. I mean, of course, if we know, then we'll get Brian's thoughts getting ready for Media Days the following week. But, yeah, I heard the guys on the line, wondering about who's going to be there representing Auburn.
Yeah.
It's not just like, well, it's got to be this guy, that guy, and there's the third. You know, I mean, I don't know that I could say I'm sure of any of the three.
Right. No, there's nobody who stands out as the obvious one. Maybe Jarquez Hunter would stand out as the most obvious choice.
He would have. I mean,
there's been some news reports.
That situation's been clouded.
Yeah, a little bit unclear. With a new coaching staff, I mean, are they going to take new players? Would they take first year guys?
They haven't been around any of these
exactly.
guys for more than 6 months.
Are they going to look to the veterans in the locker room? Guys who have been, you know. Are the veteran leaders on this team players that have been on the team for a long time, or could there be veteran leadership from some of the newly arrived transfers? Like I don't know. My guess was
two defense, one offense. What I feel like.
Okay, I've guessed one player. If I had to guess, would be Marcus Harris.
I think that's a pretty good.
If I'm going to go three players, I will go Marcus, DJ, Luke Deal. I'll say those are my three players if I had to guess who Auburn brings.
See, I'm thinking you could go Javarius
okay.
on offense. On defense.
Who said,
I mean,
who said DJ? Was that Jake yesterday?
It was.
Jake said
I think DJ. I think Zion Puckett, Jalen Simpson, DJ. I mean, you've got Nehemiah, you've got quite a few guys in the secondary that could that would make a lot of sense.
I wouldn't, yeah, I mean, and I wouldn't rule out, I mean, I'm just assuming the three guys I picked were all on last year's team, but I mean, you could easily take Dylan Wade or Avery Jones or Gunnar Britton from the offensive line.
Or Rivaldo.
You could take Rivaldo Fairweather, who was, you know, one of the most prioritized recruits this coaching staff went after.
And was very prominent in spring.
Absolutely. I mean, there's other veterans at tight end. I mean, they could take Luke Deal. They could take Tyler Fromm, who's been through the fire on this team for a long time. Justin Rogers has been he's no stranger to the SEC.
No, you're right.
And is somebody who
and really interesting. I mean, it feels like by now we usually know. Maybe it's the week before that the SEC just released, because that's what will happen. The SEC will send out a release with all of the participants. All of the players that will be there representing the SEC schools. So maybe we'll know Monday, but looking forward to having Brian Matthews back in the studio. What you got on tap this weekend?
You know, I'm looking forward to the baseball and everything we got going on there. I might be drafted upon for some more. Might be called upon for some more furniture.
Still moving.
So yeah, so there might be some more stuff getting moved to and fro. So we'll see how that clears up. But oh yeah, hope the weather cooperates for a nice weekend for everybody.
Yeah, hopefully it does. Looks like it's going to be a July weekend. So it's going to be hot. Going to be a chance of rain. Hope everybody has a good weekend. We're out of time here on the Friday Drive. Appreciate all the input, all the calls today. Again, we'll be back on Monday, and Brian Matthews should be joining us then. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are out of here.